There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast. Again, Greg, I said last time, I'm not sure why we say welcome back, but Here we are on the Free Lunch Podcast. We must be closing in on episode 300 pretty quick.
Getting close, yeah.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool to think that we started this during a COVID lockdown.
Yeah, we're closing in on 6 years of doing these podcasts. So
6 years. That's amazing when you think about it.
Yeah.
Parking was so much cheaper 6 years ago.
Oh, man, it was so easy.
Like $5 a day.
Yeah.
You park wherever you wanted.
Oh, yeah.
Commuting was a breeze.
Piece of cake.
Yeah. Maybe we should go back to another global lockdown.
I still remember my daughter was learning to drive during COVID, and it was fantastic because you could go out on any street. There was nobody around and No fear.
Didn't matter which lane she was in.
No.
Like signals, who cares?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Well, things have changed a bit in that 6 years, but some things repeat themselves, I think I would say.
Yeah.
Right? So right now, I'm just going to read this. Imagine waking up to headlines, missiles, invasions, sanctions, a shipping lane shutdown, or a surprise election result that changes the rules. Your phone lights up and global markets immediately have an opinion. It sounds crazy when you say that.
Yeah.
We've kind of been through all of those things,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Invasions, sanctions. Remember the Suez Canal? Where that shipping freighter was stuck in the canal?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, causing supply, demand, disruptions. We've had surprise election results, and global markets have reacted. And usually, in the very, very short term, it can be a sell now, ask questions later movement by the market, right?
Yep.
So today we're breaking down, well, what happens next after that initial response? To which a lot of people are like, well, why didn't we do something when the market went down? You're like, you mean like for like 10 minutes it went down?
That's
like,
right.
Why didn't we do something? So it's not that markets can't go down, that initial drop, but the part that investors care about most is how long do those sell-offs typically last? How long does it take for full recovery? And what's the impact on Canada? Because geopolitics doesn't just hit stocks. It hits things like oil, trade, our Canadian dollar, and our GDP.
Yeah, right on.
So today we're talking about geopolitical shocks in global markets. We have a lot of geopolitical, stuff happening.
Yep.
Stuff is hitting the fan, right?
Yeah.
And what history says about drawdowns and recovery time, and we'll cover some major conflicts and global events, pretty much since World War II, and highlight what tends to drive market damage. And we attempt to tie it back to the FX impacts for Canada and GDP effects. So that's a long introduction to say, we could summarize it by saying it's probably going to be fine, but let's go through the data, Greg.
Sure. So the first point is the markets hate uncertainty, but they price it pretty quickly. Markets aren't really shocked by bad news as much as they're shocked by the surprise and uncertainty. You know, and this happened recently, actually, when over a weekend, the president of the United States was musing about attacking Greenland militarily.
Yeah.
And that happened over the weekend. And Monday, the stock market opened and the Dow Jones dropped about 800 points.
Tuesday that happened because Monday the market was closed.
Right. Monday the market was closed. So an extra day of uncertainty building up.
Yeah.
So the markets tanked for a day. And the next day, giving a speech at Davos, the president said that military options were off the table, it seemed, and the market recovered.
Yeah.
So, it's the uncertainty that the markets care about, you know. And so one of the most consistent patterns in market history is that geopolitical shocks often produce a sharp drawdown, as we experienced, and then in many cases a relatively quick recovery, unless the event spills into energy, inflation, trade, or a recession channel. So Deutsche Bank summarized that pattern as roughly about a 6% decline over about 3 weeks and a full recovery over another 3 weeks on average across many geopolitical shocks that we've experienced in the past. And the CFA Institute also echoed that broad idea that most drawdowns tied to geopolitical spikes have tended to be recovered within 1 to 2 months. Not always, but very often.
Yeah. And so I guess why are we doing this episode today? Because we've got a lot of geopolitical stuff. Some of the questions I've been getting from clients are like, what happens if there's World War III?
Yeah.
Honestly, Greg, I don't know what happens if there's World War III.
No.
I can't rationalize that. Yeah. So instead, we're just looking at data, you know, of how long it took things to recover from other things, right? So putting some numbers on it. Here are some, several well-cited U.S. market examples with drawdown size and days to recovery. So some of them, I would argue, maybe a little bit too far back to really mean anything now. But anyways, the Korean War, 1950, S&P 500 fell, call it 13%.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Iraq invades Kuwait, 1990, call it a 17% drawdown. It took 189 days to recover. 9/11, you remember 9/11?
I do.
There's roughly a 12% drawdown. It took 31 days to recover. That's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah.
Only 31 days.
Yeah, 1 month.
The Madrid bombing in 2004, there's 20 days for full recovery. Boston Marathon bombing in 2013, there was about 15 days to recovery. So it's not that they can't recover quickly, right? It's the market recovery window is often measured in weeks or months.
Yeah,
unless the events trigger broader economic damage. And so those unless cases usually show up when energy prices surge, trade freezes, inflation spikes, or the event coincides with something that was already fragile.
Yeah.
Why some shocks recover fast and others don't? I mean, there's something that separates the quick snapback events from the drawn out ones.
Yep.
And there are three big channels. The first is energy shock. The second is trade shock. And the third is financial conditions shock. It's a bit of a mouthful there, Greg.
It is.
The energy shock, so if geopolitics hits oil and gas flows, it can spill into inflation and growth. So you often hear about how oil is has some inflationary pressures with it, right?
Sure, yeah.
Trade shock around sanctions, tariffs, shipping lane risk, supply chain fragmentation, and financial conditions shock, how risk-off moves tighten credit and investment. So all of those channels connect directly to GDP.
So let's look at what the research says about GDP and war or tension. The simplest way to say it is that conflict and heightened geopolitical risk tend to reduce investment and growth, especially when conflicts are intense or prolonged. So the World Bank has estimated that severe conflicts are associated with roughly 15% lower GDP per capita after 5 years. So that's, you know, that's pretty significant. And IMF research finds that when conflict intensity rises significantly, say to say from no conflict to very high intensity, it's associated with materially lower real investment growth.
But that makes sense, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, so what companies, you know, are looking to invest in plant and equipment and stuff like that when there's significant conflict going on that could affect, you know, the economics of their business.
Yeah. Like nobody's buying a business in Ukraine right now.
Exactly.
As an example, right?
Exactly.
You know,
one chapter in the IMF research cites about a 4.5 percentage point lower real investment growth in that situation. So zooming out, even just uncertainty matters. So the Bank of England analysis shows that one standard deviation increase in geopolitical risk is associated with an estimated 0.2 percentage point reduction in GDP growth at peak, and certainly worse in adverse tail scenarios, just meaning the more extreme scenarios.
Yeah.
So if you're wondering why markets sell off, it's not just fear, it's the probability weighted hit to future cash flows through growth and margins. So let's look at Canada specifically. And part of the issue in Canada is that foreign exchange is part of the story. So when geopolitics hits, Canadians feel it through two big levers. One is oil and commodities, and secondly is the Canadian dollar.
Which are all linked, right?
Absolutely.
The price of oil has an impact on the Canadian dollar, period.
Yeah, absolutely.
You heard it here first, Greg.
Well, and then the Bank of Canada obviously heard it from you because they've documented that the dollar sensitivity to oil and commodity factors has actually increased over time.
Well, it's just like them to just, you know.
I know.
Ride our coattails.
To listen to this podcast, you know, and then come up with their conclusions.
Yeah, so you're welcome, Bank of Canada.
Yeah, and so, you know, most people have heard, you know, very often that the Canadian dollar behaves like a commodity-linked currency because it is.
Yeah.
And the Bank of Canada also highlights that Canadian dollars are influenced by systemic global risk factors. So basically, Canada's currency is tied to the wider risk-on, risk-off machine.
Sure. Well, let's talk about the other big data drop, which is the Canadian dollar tug of war during geopolitical shocks. So, you know, here's the Canadian dollar tug of war when geopoliticals flares.
Yep.
So force number one is there's a risk off flight to US dollars.
Yep.
So this is just something that happens when the world gets scary. Money often runs to what's perceived as safe. And the US dollar has been known as the risk-free currency in the world.
Yep.
You could argue that that is changing.
It may be.
What's happening today, but historically, that's what it's been.
Yep.
Force number two is this oil shock, which is often positive to the Canadian dollar. So if the same event spikes oil, that can support the Canadian dollar because energy is such a major export and terms of trade can improve. So,
sure. So
Canada can get yanked in both directions at once. The risk off hurts the Canadian dollar. Oil up helps the Canadian dollar. So no result depends on which dominates. And you can see that relationship in recent market commentary too. Like the Canadian dollar routinely reacts to oil moves and global risk sentiment, which there's a lot of global risk sentiment these days.
For sure.
So let's translate that into investor reality. Like a big US dollar move changes the picture for Canadians holding global assets, period. Right.
Yep.
Again, Bank of Canada, you're welcome if you want to steal that.
For sure.
So there's two simple effects. If the Canadian dollar falls during a risk-off event, you have unhedged U.S. global holdings, which can look better in Canadian dollar terms.
Sure.
If the Canadian dollar rises on an oil spike, well, then foreign holdings can look worse in Canadian dollar terms. So for Canadian companies, that FX move can feed into their earnings, right?
For sure. And for investors, you know, and we've talked about this with clients over many years, is if you want to separate out the effect of currency from your global investments, you can always choose to buy hedged investments, which eliminates that currency risk. If you believe that investing globally means that global companies or global economies can do better than Canada, you'd expect decline in the Canadian dollar. So you might choose unhedged, in which case you're taking investment risk from the investments themselves, but also currency risk. So yes, it absolutely has significant impact on investors in global assets.
Yeah. And there is some theory out there that some of the moves that the current U.S. administration is doing is actually to weaken the U.S. dollar to improve its trade.
Sure.
Right. I don't know if that's true or not, but from an economic perspective, exporters often benefit from a weaker dollar.
Right.
Yeah. So this is why central banks like having flexible exchange rates. The currency can act as kind of a shock absorber.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, let's just take a look at some of the global markets and look at some modern war examples beyond the S&P 500. So, you know, people sometimes ask, is this just a U.S. stock story? And it's not really. So MSCI has written about how modern wars affected market performance and volatility. For instance, Russia's 2022 invasion of Ukraine was associated with a sharp jump in volatility, and the global market path was then shaped by sanctions, inflation, and monetary policy responses, which reinforces the key point. Is sometimes the market impact isn't the war headline itself. It's those second-order effects of energy, inflation, and rates. So let's look at some of the major conflicts and global geopolitical events since World War II that have shaped markets, trade, energy, and global risk regimes.
But now I have to warn everybody, it's a bit of a laundry list here.
There's a bit of a laundry list, and it just highlights, you know, as we've talked about over the course of many, almost 300 podcasts, a lot of these events have certainly affected the markets for a period of time, and they've affected economies, GDP of global economies. The market has survived and maintained a very positive long-term return, but not necessarily every year. Mm-hmm. And so here's some of the major conflicts that have sort of hit us and the markets. So, you know, from 1945 to 1959, that was kind of the early Cold War period after World War II. There was the conclusion of the Chinese Civil War. The People's Republic of China was founded in 1949. We had the Korean War from 1950 to 53, the Suez Crisis in 1956, and the Hungarian Uprising in 56 as well. In 1960 to 69, we had the Cuban Missile Crisis, 1962. For some of us that are old enough to remember that, it was a very scary time. Vietnam War escalated in the 60s, finally ended in 1975. and the Arab-Israeli conflicts, which included the Six-Day War in 1967. In the 70s, we had the Yom Kippur War in 1973 and the 1973 oil embargo and oil shock. Mm-hmm. The Iranian Revolution was in 1979 and a second major oil shock. And Cold War tensions and arms buildup cycles occurred during that period as well. In the 1980s, we had the Iran-Iraq War in 1988, Soviet-Afghan War in 79 to 89, just a short 10-year period there, Falklands War in 1982, and the late stage of the Cold War, which ended with the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989. In the 1990s, we had Iraq invades Kuwait in 1990, the Gulf War in 1991, the Yugoslav Wars and Balkan conflicts, and the Asian financial crisis, which was not a war, but certainly it was a major geopolitical and economic shock. I remember that one quite clearly as well.
Yeah.
Then in the 2000s, we get into the 9/11 attacks, the Afghan war, Iraqi war, London bombings in 2005, and the global financial crisis, which is becoming much more relevant to many of us. Mm-hmm. Again, that wasn't a war, but it was a system shock that certainly interacted with geopolitics. In the 2010s, we had the Arab Spring in 2010 to 2012 and continued Middle East instability, the rise of ISIS, the Russia-Ukraine conflict, South China Sea tensions, and the U.S.-China trade war. And now we get into the 2020s. COVID-19, most people remember that, which was a system shock and geopolitical supply chain effects, Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, ongoing Middle East conflict flare-ups and shipping and energy risk, and rising sanctions regimes, and friend-shoring fragmentation dynamics, which is basically trade rerouting. Mm-hmm. So, that's an important meta point, meaning a lot of these events don't just move markets for a day. They reshape trade routes, energy flows, and investment patterns, which ultimately shows up in GDP trends and corporate earnings.
Yeah, but a lot of people say, yeah, but it's different this time.
Yeah.
Right, Greg? It's different this time.
Yeah, and if you look back over that long list, you can see it's not really different.
No, like even the participants in those activities tend to rhyme.
Yep.
Right? All throughout the last 50, 60 years or so. So
yep.
It's or longer, I guess, 70 years. But, you know, so on trade, I mean, research from major central banking circles, I mean, it does suggest that geopolitical risk shocks can reduce imports and raise import prices. That makes sense,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it means fragmentation can be inflationary and growth negative. That also makes sense.
Yeah.
It loops back to Canada again, which basically says a trade shock in the world's biggest economies can bleed into Canadian growth through export and investment. And where I see this right now is everybody's like, you know, if you talk about the U.S. and everything that's happening
yeah.
to the U.S., you know, the U.S. is of such a size that whatever happens to it affects every other country in the world.
Yeah.
Whatever happens to Canada affects Canadians, mm-hmm. but not much far beyond that.
Right.
Right? So when we see all of these things happening in the U.S., like the geopolitical uprising, I don't want to get into all the details of it, but
no,
it you can see how it can impact, firstly, its national markets.
Yeah,
but it's international markets too.
Sure.
Right? Like, you know, there's all this trade rerouting happening right now.
Yeah.
We've got Canada meeting with China.
That's right.
For the first time in forever.
Yeah.
Establishing new trade, you know? That wasn't on the table in 2020.
No, and same with Europe. You know, European countries are looking to find new trade partners,
mm-hmm.
you know, given the tariff regime that's been put in place by the U.S. And so, yeah, these can have long-lasting impacts of various economies around the world.
Yeah, change is the only constant, is the saying, right?
So there you go.
Three balanced takeaways. What we'd say is, number one, markets recover from geopolitical sell-offs faster than people expect.
Yeah.
This is a big one. You know, I will often ask people, do you remember when Kennedy was shot? Greg, do you remember when Kennedy was shot?
I do, actually.
Okay.
Yep.
And you probably remember the answer.
I wasn't paying a lot of attention to the markets at the time, though.
Yeah. So how long do you, like, and you know, the market went down immediately,
yep.
right? And how long do you think it stayed down for? So full recovery.
I'm really not sure.
You don't know this?
No.
One day.
Very good.
One day.
One day. Yeah. The assassination of a very popular president.
Crazy.
Yep.
Crazy. So number two, the slow recoveries tend to happen when geopolitics hits macro fundamentals, so oil, inflation, trade breakdowns, or recession dynamics. I mean, this is all kind of going on right now as we speak, right?
Yeah.
And number three for Canadians, you know, watch the impact of FX or foreign exchange. The Canadian dollar can move on both sentiment and oil, and that can amplify or dampen your global returns in Canadian dollar terms. So just what you were talking about earlier about whether you should hedge or not hedge, etc.
Yep.
As Canadians, we're paid in Canadian dollars. We're investing in Canadian markets. We're investing in Canadian dollars, etc.
Yep.
I mean, we need to dampen some of the impact of that FX, right?
Sure.
That's all I got, Greg.
That's it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, severe conflict can be economically costly through investment, productivity, human capital, for sure, and trade. Even if stock markets, you know, they say stock markets climb a wall of worry. Mm-hmm. And I guess the point is that certain worries, certain shocks, markets can recover quite quickly.
Yeah.
Shocks that affect the economy or the GDP of major economies, stocks can still recover, but they could take a long time. You know, and so when you look at things like, you know, the economic downturns of the mid-70s, you know, 73, 74, 75, markets recovered from that. It took a while. Things like those very short-term geopolitical shocks, very significant, like 9/11, took a month.
Sure.
You know, so the nature of the shock might determine the recovery path. But I think one thing's pretty clear is that from an investment standpoint, trying to use these shocks as market timing events doesn't really work because you really have no idea how quickly or slowly the markets will recover. And chances are you'll be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, I mean, if you think about March of 2020 when we had the world shut down with the coronavirus stuff,
mm-hmm.
I mean, for a short period of time, the whole world stopped making things.
Yeah.
Right? And the stock market went down 35% in like 2 weeks.
Yep.
And then had full recovery within, I don't know, 3 months or something.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So a lot of people say, well, that wasn't even really a sell-off technically because it was so short, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, of course it was a sell-off.
Sure.
But, you know, it didn't stop there because even the pain that the markets experienced in 2022 from rising interest rates to offset higher than normal inflation, that higher than normal inflation was created by a supply-demand imbalance that was created in March of 2020.
Exactly.
So it took 2 or 3 years to get into the system and then another 2 or 3 years to get out of the system.
Yeah.
Right?
Interesting.
So,
yep.
Yeah. I find it fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, if you don't like what we're saying here, if you don't believe what we're saying, don't listen.
Exactly.
Go find something else to do with your time. Apparently the Bank of Canada is listening to us, so that's cool.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I think that's all we got, Greg.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that then.
Yep. Till next time.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, an exempt market dealer. Canvas is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals, and they have not been approved by, and are not necessarily those of, Q Wealth as a firm. This is not legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice, and should not be relied as such.